What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back. This is The Deep Corner, presented by the Volleyball League of America, episode 50. I'm Rob St. Clair and a very special guest all the way from Germany, about 7 hours ahead of where I am right now. He has played libero for the Chicago Icemen. He currently plays libero for VfB Friedrichshafen in the German Bundesliga. Mr. Avery Aylesworth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rob. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to see you, buddy. It's we saw each other over the summer a couple of times. We had some Iceman practice and Waupaca boat ride, of course, and then you promptly ship back overseas for your second season in the Bundesliga, which is really sweet. And your team is good, and I'm excited to talk about your German experience because there's a lot going on in Europe right now. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. I mean, I think for a couple of us Americans, there's some really cool leagues going on right now, some really tight competitions, especially in Poland, Italy, and then within Germany specifically. The league is going to be tight this year, that's for sure. So it should be an exciting couple of months as we're getting into kind of the middle of the season here.
Yeah, league's real tight. And before we dive into it, I want to plug another show that I've been doing. If you want to hear more about just, especially from a North American, like American and Canadian focused kind of recap of what's going on in all the leagues across the world, me and friend of the show, Everett Delorme of the Volleyball Source Network, have a show called The 9x9. It's on the Volleyball Source YouTube channel live on Tuesday nights. So if you want to check that out, we got a lot more. We look at highlights. Like we had a great clip last week of Joe Worsley like dishing Dalton Solberg on the slide, which went kind of viral.
Yeah, I saw a clip of that you guys posted. That was sweet.
That was great. So yeah, check out that show if you want to hear more about like some of the stuff that Avery and I'll get into about what's going on in Europe. But I want to start, dude, before you even came to Chicago in the first place, because you're a Bay Area, California kid, grew up in San Jose, and you played on a national championship winning club team, Pacific Rim, that won Natties in like 2015. So first, hit the people with who some of your teammates were on that team.
Oh man. Yeah. So just a little backstory to that. So that was my last year in clubs. So I was 18 for that. And some of the teammates that we had were kind of from all over, but it was Joe and Gage Worsley. And then, we also had Jordan Ewart, who was kind of from that same area around Antioch and Walnut Creek, kind of East Bay. And then we had Michael Ma'a, from Hawaii. And then we had Patrick Gasman, who just recently graduated from Hawaii, with Gage, after winning the national championship. He's down in Brazil right now. But six guys from that team that ended up kind of going off to kind of take that next step after college. But yeah, those are some of the OG guys, some of the best buds, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what a ridiculous lineup for a club team that is. Yeah, there's some national championships, there's some very real pro experience with all you guys combined. So that was pretty sweet. And then you went, I guess you probably went the farthest other than the kids that went to Hawaii, from home to Chicago at Loyola. And so tell me about your choice to come to the Midwest and how your recruitment process kind of went as a libero, which will probably segue into how we discuss like kind of the international transfer world of liberos and just what it's like to try and make a name for yourself at that position. So how'd you get to play for Coach Mark Hulse at Loyola?
Yeah, definitely. So kind of going through the high school recruiting process, getting my foot in the door, just knowing that libros, you know, aren't the most heavily recruited position. And, you know, similar to a setter, right, there's only one of you on the court at a time. So it's not like a middle, or it's not like, you know, an outside hitter where they're going to be carrying four or five guys deep on the roster in university. So just kind of having that in the back of my mind and speaking to a few people, you know, that happened to go through my high school, and kind of play at the next level and in college, that, we were able to provide some good advice. I kind of, you know, had to attack it head on. So you spent a lot of cold emailing, drafting up email templates, drafting up, you know, volleyball CVs, volleyball resumes, and, you know, kind of having the mentality of being almost a, I don't want to say a door-to-door salesman, but it's kind of the idea is like, hey, there's going to be a lot of rejection here and there, but it's more about getting that visibility, and it's just trying to get that name, get that profile out there. So, you know, when, you know, there is an opportunity, you want to strike when the iron's hot. So essentially it was just kind of shooting out emails to every Division I and Division II team that I could think of, and a couple of D3 teams. And then Obviously with Libero and similar to Sutter, it's going to be need based. You know, unless you're, you know, the number one recruit in the class as a Libero, which is really, really challenging to do. So it's going to be more need based. So there will be some rejection, even if it is a target school for you. So there are a few schools that got back to me and then kind of proceeded to have that conversation throughout, you know, the summers and more as more falls about kind of the club seasons and stuff like that. So, you know, I think it was my junior year. We were playing in the club division, but we ended up making it to the finals of the club division. So we were actually playing after the match from when Pacrim won their first national championship against, I think it was Balboa Bay. But anyway, so we were able to make it pretty far. I was able to get some pretty good visibility from the club perspective. And then after that was approached by a few coaches. And from there, I think it's kind of the approach that I took. And if I could offer any advice, you just kind of keeping as many options open. I know it's a little different now with the recruiting landscape, but I was able to, you know, have a few conversations, a few visits to, I think, 2, 3, maybe 4 universities. And then for me, you know, when it came down to kind of the final decision time, you know, I didn't want to, you know, necessarily take a route that might mortgage another part of my future. So for me, academics was really, really, really important, especially within within business. And so Loyola actually has a top undergraduate business school. So that really kind of paired nicely with what my priorities were, which were, you know, obviously, you know, get a good education, and then 2, you know, pair it with high level volleyball, where, you know, if there's the opportunity to play at that next level, whether it be, you know, pro, you know, or with Team USA, there is that chance and there is that pipeline, and it's an established pipeline. So that was kind of the main idea and kind of the philosophy and kind of why I just kind of stuck with Loyola. As you know, there are a few other schools that were interested, but yeah, it was more just kind of focusing on the education piece and then wanting to make sure that I had that avenue and sort of that springboard and that foundation if needed for kind of the next step with Loyola.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's all really well said. A lot of detail there about just how the process works. And that's that echoes some things that some guys have said on the show before about how they kind of went about it. There oftentimes comes a point in like a successful recruitment story where the script is kind of flipped between like you really aggressively putting yourself out there, and then one or two people start to take notice, and then you become the one being courted or pursued. And that is a cool moment and kind of a hinge pin success point, a lot of people's recruiting. And then just kind of the funnel imagery of you throw a ton of volume in the top of the funnel, and eventually at the very bottom of the funnel, you get something out. And for you, that ended up being Loyola. So you stepped into a Loyola program that had just won back-to-back national championships the year that you got there. They were coming off 2 in a row. A very unique circumstance, because they returned a decent amount of that starting lineup, but not everyone. But the libero that won that championship in 2015 returned. He was back and was there again. So what was it like stepping into that program, considering what they had just accomplished and your personal trajectory and increase in playing time over your career there?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. So just kind of getting into the details of it. So they returned their starting setter, both middles. They were also returning their opposite. And I believe they were, so, but they didn't return any of their outsides because Thomas Jeschke
left signed with Sylvia.
So we had 2 kind of rookie outsides, if you will, or kind of stepping into that role for the first spot. But kind of to your point with the question regarding play time and, you know, kind of managing that and knowing that that Libero that, you know, won that national championship, Jake Selsky, you know, he was a freshman at the time, and knowing I kind of had a lot in front of me to kind of get, you know, my foot in the door and start working my way up and having, you know, increased time on the court, was just kind of having the right mentality. It's so easy to, you know, when you're coming out of high school and, you know, you can be, you know, a top player, you can be a top guy at your high school, a top guy at your club. I'm sure many people have kind of heard the analogy where, you know, once you make it to that next level, you're kind of at the bottom of the rungs and you're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole, and you got to kind of work your way up. And then once you reach that next level again, you're kind of all the way back down to the bottom. So it's just kind of embracing that and understanding that, you know, while there was a lot of success kind of in the high school career and club career, you know, that's great and all, but it's kind of, what have you done for me lately? And kind of saying that to yourself, or it's, you kind of got to reset, understand the circumstances, you know, you don't necessarily want to rush into things, but you want to make sure you're being proactive. So, you know, just kind of taking a moment to understand, hey, you know, I'm a freshman. The guy in front of me is a sophomore. He just won a national championship. Let's not get too bent out of shape if I don't see the court, you know, for the first part, you know, of my freshman year. But what can I do that's in my control? I can lift super, super hard. I can control my diet. I can control my health as, you know, things that can provide a lot of benefits on the court. And if they're taking actions off the court to, you know, kind of help that on-court performance. So for me, it was more of just being a gym rat, both getting a lot of reps, going into the weight room, working out a bunch, you know, kind of doing all the right things on and off the court to make sure that, you know, if I didn't see the court as much as I wanted to freshman year, freshman summer, going into sophomore year, I could then eventually, you know, take that opportunity, you know, with a little bit more maturity, a little bit more of an understanding of the program, you know, being able to kind of jump into things and hit the ground running that sophomore season. And that's kind of where, you know, I was able to get a little bit more time on the court. I split. And then from there, you know, was able to kind of be the full-time libero for the second half of the season. And kind of from there, you know, the rest is history, but I'd say mentality is a big thing. I'm sure we'll talk about it more as we talk more about the pro situation, but, you know, understanding where you're at, understanding sort of the environment that you're at and having the right mentality to approach it, I think is extremely underrated when you're entering a new environment where you might not be the top guy anymore.
Yep, that's very well said, and a perspective that is really important and not maybe as common as it used to be. There's a some kids will approach their recruitment as, where can I go where I can play right away versus what's going to be the best program for me for 4 years. Or like, what's going to make me a better player, give me the most opportunities in or out of volleyball. And that's clearly how you approached it. And if you ask me, that's the right way to approach it. So you come out of Loyola, and the opportunity to play professionally was there for you at the time. You go over to Finland for Raision Loimu, which takes a few Americans a year. Blake Leeson, who's been on the show, played there the same year as you. Is that right? Or were you?
Yeah, so he was actually my roommate.
Yeah. I think I remember that, because when I had Blake on the show, it was like early, mid COVID, after you guys had ended the season early and had to come home. And he was telling me that you guys had spent a lot of time together, which was cool. So you make the move to Finland, and then a year later, you're in Germany, one of the best leagues in the world, which is also, and this can got to get into the concept of professional overseas contracts, especially for liberos. The reason why a lot of times you see a ton of Americans in Germany is because I would argue that they're the best league in Europe that doesn't have any limits on how many foreign players you're allowed to have, either on the roster or on the court. Italy has that. Poland has it even a little more strict than Italy. And Russia has that, the strictest of them all. And just how many foreign, like non-Russian, for example, you can only have 2 non-Russian players on the court at a time. In Italy, you can have 4. And I think Poland, it's 3. But Germany, there's no limit at all. So it's a great place for Americans or just international players to go and have a better chance at seeing the court without having to worry about the disadvantage of the fact that they're not from that country. Do you have a similar take on that about the German league?
Yeah, no. So I think you're spot on with that. The one thing that I would add is the French league. So the French league, it's a very, I don't really know how to say it properly, to be honest with you. So they don't have they do, but they don't. So there is no foreigner limit, but if you have a non-foreign, or if you have a foreign player playing for a team in France, that counts as a French player because you're supposed to have 1 French player on the court. But that French player could be classified as a foreigner who's been in the league for over 5 years or with the same team for over 5 years. It's some kind of strange rule that I heard about last year. But you'll see as well, like there's a lot of, I don't know about Americans. There's always a good amount of Americans, Canadians within the French league, but you also see a lot of Argentinians and a lot of South Americans in the French league because it's very similar, or we're in kind of all the same boat with regards to, you know, not having a professional league. I know in Brazil, they have one. Argentina's is getting hit a little bit just kind of from the whole economic perspective. But so in general, like a lot of South American players are trying to find positions out here in Europe. So to your point, exactly, like with Germany, you see that there's a ton of Americans out here because it's I think it's, you know, one of the better kind of overall leagues. Like, there's decent visibility, good opportunities to travel, good opportunities to play competition because you're surrounded by, you know, a good amount of countries for preseason tournaments. And then from there, like
decent CV opportunities for sure. You get a couple Champions League CV Cup spots every year, which we'll talk about in a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then you obviously have, you know, like really, really brand name teams like Berlin, you know, who's been in Champions League and, you know, been at the top of the German league for a long, long time. And so there's a lot of good opportunities for, you know, people coming overseas and being able to get your foot in the door into Germany. Because you know, it's just interesting with, like you said, for the foreigner limits, you know, Belgium, you know, you have Roeselare and Mosaic, and, you know, I think they have a 1 or 2 foreigner limit. So it's pretty tough to get into there. But Finland also doesn't have a foreigner limit either. So, you know, if we want to kind of dive into that a little bit, if you want to get to that process, we'd be happy to kind of shed some light on kind of what that was like.
Yeah, let's hear it. And we heard it a little bit from Blake when we had him on the show about the lifestyle and the level of game in Finland. I know he got to play a little bit of opposite that year, which is pretty cool. But my overall feel on it is that both the quality of life in Germany and the level and stability of your volleyball situation in Germany are probably a good amount of an upgrade over your Finland experience. Is that fair to say?
So for me, it's weird saying this. So being a California kid, I've now spent 7 like harsh, or about to be 7 after this winter, harsh winters, right? 4 in Chicago, 1 in Finland, and now 2 in Germany. So for me, it was a bit of a shock going to Finland. Obviously, you know, it's borders Russia. It's, you know, I think 10 hours time difference from California, from my home. So it was definitely a shock. You know, you get maybe 2 hours of sunlight if it's sunny, because usually it's just gray. So you get 2 hours of light gray, you know, at high noon versus dark gray for the rest of the morning and in the evening. But for me, I love the Finland experience. For me, it's, I've been pretty big on just getting outside my comfort zone, and whether it be with Loyola, trying to, you know, push myself into an opportunity that had both, you know, good academics, challenge myself there, good volleyball, challenge myself there, you know, kind of see what I can make of it. And then with Finland, you know, being able to, you know, take it for what it is, you know, it's just kind of an opportunity that you never really think about very much. Like, you know, you say, hey, I want to play pro volleyball, but when you kind of get down to the nitty gritty of it, it's like, oh wow, like I'm going to be on a plane to Finland. Like, I'm flying in from Latvia on a propeller plane to a country that I've never been to before and never have imagined going to, you know, since I kind of was aware of the pro volleyball scene. So for me, it was definitely eye-opening, but the people were fantastic. You know, the coach that Blake and I had, he was really, really forward-thinking and progressive with some of the plays and actions. And he was really, really invested in trying to implement new things. So like one, for example, would be like passing techniques were drastically different. So it was cool, like being able to experience something that, you know, I've never been exposed to before in the US, because within the US, you know, you might have certain systems that are, you know, while they are somewhat different a little bit throughout programs, down to the foundation, they're very much the same. But going abroad, like you're open to so many new ideas and open to so many different perspectives. So that aspect of it was great. And then kind of off the court as well, you know, you're in a foreign country. I took the opportunity to try and explore as much as I could. Luckily, we had a few English speaking guys on the team as well. We had, I'm not sure if you remember, but Tamir Hirschko from UC Irvine. So he was on the team. Then we had a middle from the Australian national team. So kind of a good group that we can kind of all hang out with and explore the town. So for me, I truly loved it. Just the sunlight was a bit of a struggle. But other than that, you know, I think everything else was fantastic, from hospitality to kind of, you know, even if the level of play is, you know, different from, you know, maybe a Poland and an Italy, you know, it's a great opportunity to kind of get your foot in the door and, you know, kind of look to make that next jump.
Yeah, it sounded like it was a perfect stepping stone for both you and Blake and a lot of guys who have come and played in Finland. I know Mike Mikkelau, an Iceman guy, was in Finland last year. I think he's in Sweden now, or maybe I'm mixing those up. He actually might be in Finland now.
Yeah, so he's in Oulu, which is just south of the Arctic Circle. for all you geography people out there.
Yeah, that just proximity to the Arctic Circle, even from me being from Chicago, is a ridiculous concept to talk
right,
about.
Yeah, just using it as a reference point definitely is a little bit of bit of a shock.
That's insane. So you made the move to Germany, and I mean, there's so much to talk about, even about the way COVID has affected you. But we've talked about COVID so much on the show that I want to even skip that just a little bit. Tell me more about the landscape of being an American, perhaps, or just a non-German or foreign libero trying to make a living playing professional volleyball, because your stats aren't as easy to figure out. Sometimes you don't have them at all. Like, I've been commentating the Italian league, and they don't stat digs in that league, which is crazy to me. They only have passing percentages, and the film that you can get is more difficult to pick out a great, consistently great libero than it is at some other positions. There's just less of a sample size, and it's just more challenging to understand how good a particular libero is just based on what you can see on film or on paper or whatever. So tell me your thoughts about what the libero professional market is right now, and how you kind of fit into that as an American, just where you're at right now in Germany.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love, actually, if you're open to it, I'd love to kind of, provide as much value as possible to anyone who's thinking about making that next step, and kind of break it up into two parts. Is I'd love to talk about, sort of the recruiting side of it, making that first step for me to Finland, and then kind of how I was able to manage the process getting into Germany. And then on the other side of it, we'd love to kind of talk about, like you said, for the statistics, the video, as it's also kind of sort of intertwined with it as well. If that's
absolutely. Yeah. Let's break it down into two. I like that a lot.
Perfect. Yeah. So from the recruiting side, so I'll just kind of use my own experience. And there can be a lot of parallels for anybody who's kind of thinking about, like I said, that next step. But so for me, coming from Loyola, I wasn't in the national team at the time. So, that was a bit of a detriment, as a lot of international clubs just look at, national team rosters, national team lists, and kind of use that as, sort of that blue check mark, if you will, that verified, top player, top international player for your respective country. So, not being able to have that. And then also, I believe the rules for being able to talk to agents was a little different when I was there. It could have been the same as it is now, but
is this in Finland or when you were in college?
When I was in college. So this is like getting into Finland. So the process that I had to go through was, I didn't really know where to start, to be honest with you. So what I just did is I just reached out to a few people that kind of in my network that had gone pro. So like Jeff Gendrick was one of them. Tom Geschke, talked to him a little bit. And then I spoke with James Shaw, kind of growing up in the Bay Area, and all three of them were immensely helpful to kind of helping me get this process started. And then from there, Jeff was able to introduce me to a few other players that he was with, a few other Americans on his Berlin team. One of them was Dustin Watton, and he had obviously the American Libero experience. And if you followed anything kind of regarding his story, amazing kind of the grit that he had to kind of see things through and kind of roll the punches. And so, they introduced me to a few agents, but being an American Libero, I was actually denied from those agents. So you can have as much film, you can have as much stats, you can be, an All-American, but you have to have an agent, or I'd recommend having an agent when you're in college, because you don't know anything about the season in Europe. You don't know anything about the landscape. You don't know anything about the teams. You can try and be as updated as possible with it, but until you get over here, there's so many nuances that you're just unaware of. So for example, last year, the market moved extremely fast, where leagues, say like Germany, were signing guys in like February, which is not normal.
That's the middle of the season. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're looking to pursue guys, they're looking to sign guys in February, which is more of like a time where you'd be thinking about, Italy, Poland, and Russia as sort of those top teams who take, those tier one guys, right? So the markets can move extremely fast without even knowing it, being in university. So kind of a plug there, I'd recommend finding an agent, as they probably know more about the markets within Europe. But from my personal experience, after being denied from those couple of agents, what I did is I went onto the FIVB website and found an Excel spreadsheet of a couple hundred FIVB registered agents. And similar to my experience within college, I just started sending out cold emails.
Blasting them with emails, yeah.
Exactly. Just good old-fashioned email blast with my volleyball CV and a bunch of YouTube links and a highlight reel, just to kind of make it quick and concise and say, hey, here's what I bring to the table. As a player, would you want to maybe partner up with your agency and see if we can find a deal for this upcoming season? And from there, you know, it's just kind of a waiting game. Like, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much in your control. So with that in mind, it's more of just cold outreach. You know, especially on the Libro side of things, it's so difficult because you're not an offensive player. You're not scoring any points. They don't see as much value in you for that because, right, you're not necessarily, you know, generating 30 points a night if you're a top player. But there's also the other piece of it from a financial perspective on why the recruitment is so difficult for American players, especially Libros. And I'm sure you've heard that, you know, the increase or the excess costs that are involved with it, you know, being a foreigner, especially a Libro, right? They have to pay, you know, for the apartment, flights, travel, and if they don't have, you know, health insurance, they kind of help, you know, have to subsidize some of the health insurance and, you know, just take care of you as a player as, you know, you're on a work permit there. So they have to provide a lot more services and a lot more funding versus say, hey, you know, let's take this like 38-year-old outside hitter whose knees might be gone and convert him into a Libro, or say, hey, we'll take a young guy who has a little bit of promise. We might hurt a little bit on the Libro reception, but all other aspects, we can use the money to buy a better receiver or a better opposite. So knowing that, it's all about just trying to get in front of the right people and trying to get in front of as many people as possible. At least that was my philosophy. You know, I wasn't a big name guy. You know, I wasn't, you know, like, you know, TJ DeFalco, you know, top guy coming out of university where you had a lot of different offers from a lot of different top clubs where, you know, for me, it was more of, hey, just trying to get my foot in the door, kind of separate myself from the middle of the pack. And what can I do to differentiate myself? So you know, I guess to kind of put a bow on it, it would just be more of the ideas, you know, making sure you kind of have all your ducks in a row as that time comes, start reaching out to agents now, and then being able to be okay with a little bit of rejection and embracing the grind. I know Dustin Walton talks about that a lot, but embracing the grind, embracing the process is a huge benefit. Just to understand that, hey, you know, it's not going to be pretty, but I'm going to see this thing through to the end. I'm going to be persistent with it. And so just kind of putting yourself in as many positions of choice as possible, just kind of get yourself in front of as many people and just continue to try and do that until the right opportunity comes through, kind of comes down that pipeline.
Yeah, that's, wow, that's so much good stuff in there. Yeah, if there's any liberos trying to make the move overseas, they'd be crazy not to listen to this. A couple things that you brought up that I really liked. One is that you have to understand that from the club's perspective in Europe, their assessment of the value of an international libero makes sense. They are limited in the amount of money that they have that they're able to spend, and they're more likely, like you said, to spend more of their budget, especially in the all the additional things they have to cover for a foreign player. They're more likely to do that for somebody that will light up the score sheet for them, that will like legitimately help them score points to win matches. So it, but there are clubs out there, and if I were running a club, I would believe in this very strongly, because I think we all understand the game at a high enough level to understand the importance and the value of a top level libero, the difference making ability of a really, really good libero versus some like late career former outside that they put a different colored jersey on and tell them to just go out there because he's cheaper. That it's a business that you're starting to get into when you go overseas, and that you can understand from the club's perspective why they might value, like, if they're going to spend the extra cost on a foreigner, why they might value a point scoring foreigner or even a setter more than a libero. It makes sense. But you as a player want to go to a place that does value you for what you deserve. And there clearly are some out there, because Loimu is a great one. There are so many clubs that have had American players before, and even particular American liberos before, that there is a precedent for you, an American libero, to go in there to demand and make the money that you deserve and to make a difference on the court. So it is possible, and it has been done before. So you don't have to be scared by the business aspect of it. which is understandable from both sides because it can be done. And Avery and Dustin Watton and guys like that are proof of it. Even Eric Shoji, who came out and was obvious, he had probably had an easier time than most because the national team experience and the pedigree that he had, but it's still a difficult grind for an international libero to get all that done. So I love all that stuff so much. And then the comparison to the college, the college recruitment process, it is remarkably similar. So now tell us, once you get over there, the second aspect of it about the video, the stats, what do you recommend? Like, what does a great libero resume look like in your opinion for an international player? How do you put that together?
Yeah, definitely. So actually that brings up another point as well, kind of regarding the recruitment side. And when you're evaluating players, you know, there's so many things that are so nuanced that I don't think get talked about enough, or they just can't be seen on film. So, you know, another piece of it is to kind of why it's so hard to get your foot in the door as a libero versus, say, you know, a 6'10 opposite that crushes balls on, you know, multiple angles and goes inside 3 meters, you know, on, or can go inside 3 meters on every single ball. Versus a libero who's able to sort of game the system and shift seams. You know, there's so many little nuances that might not be able to be seen on film because they're being communicated and you're not hearing the audio. You can't hear the conversations that libros are having with their receivers, or there's the idea of, you know, if someone's bringing, you know, a 70 mile an hour jump serve, like Gabby Garcia, for example, last year at BYU, you know, if he's bringing the heat from the service line, and guys are passing, you know, at 3 meters on the 10-foot line, that's a perfect pass.
Totally.
And absolutely, you'll see it in all international leagues that when you have guys that are back there who are bringing, you know, 70 mile an hour jump serves, you're told just to put it on 3 meters. And so when you're coming from university into the college system, it can be hard, or excuse me, when you're coming from university into the pro system, it can be hard to see those nuances just because, hey, this guy isn't passing perfect on every single ball. He's putting balls at 3 meters, 2.5 meters, 3.5 meters, but it's hard to see and value that, hey, he's actually keeping the ball in play and keeping his team in system on a really, really hard ball. So just
versus
a little
like
bit
overpassing balls, or like trying to put him right on the tape, overpassing him and getting him fisted straight to the floor. Yeah. If you pass the ball to 3 meters in the pros, you can set two, maybe three guys from that position at least. And that's a huge value add. If you can give your team a chance to side out those lethal servers on the first ball, that's a huge deal. And I totally agree with the emphasis on that.
Right. Yeah. So just another point I wanted to make as well, just so people can kind of understand further nuances of the game. But when it comes to stats, so digs aren't statted for international stat sheets. Neither are assists. So you're really just working with reception. And I remember, I think it was my first game in Finland. I looked at the stat sheet after the game and I got an ace two times and I cost my team 2 points, and it shows up on the actual stat
sheet. It says negative two.
Yeah, it's like the plus slash minus column and just minus two. And like, that's it. And then you have your reception, and how they grade reception is just a percentage of good passes. So
right,
they use a 4-point system, but it's just called double plus, which is like a hashtag. And they have like plus, which is like a 3 out of 4, and double plus is a 4 out of 4. And those are called like good and perfect. So your reception is just graded on, you know, good percentage. So all your passes that were good and perfect over total passes, or just perfect over all total passes.
And that sometimes subtracts the number of errors, because in Italy I've seen like a passing efficiency number, yep, which usually implies subtracting the errors and then dividing by the total attempts.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's a few leagues as well where they have, that are a little bit more heavily, I know the Italian league is heavily statted, but I've seen it as well. I think the Finnish league does it, is where they have like a reception coefficient where they multiply it by some number and they do a lot of math in the background, and it's supposed to come out to a number that's supposed to objectively quantify the efficiency of libros in reception. So that's just a one piece of it, but kind of the idea behind it is that there's very little that shows up on a physical stat sheet for libros. There's very, very little. You get three things and you hopefully you want to be two, because you just want it to be reception, and or you want it to be like your reception and reception percentage, not
any negatives on the exactly, total points.
You're not gonna be scoring points.
Nope.
Yeah. So with us, for us Libras out here, it's definitely a challenge to kind of assert yourself, but I think you can definitely tell the differences with a good Libra and a great Libra, in the sense that, going back to the 3 meter concept, is that, you know, if every ball that the Libra is touching is landing between 3 meters and the net, and, you know, even if more of those balls are landing on 3 meters, and you say it's a heavy jump serving team, then, you know, that's a sign of a seasoned Libra, in my opinion, that's able to take care of really tough balls and not cost his team points. He's not trying to do too much. He's just trying to keep the ball in play. And I think another telling piece of it as well is Libras who you can see them communicating, either like with their hands, you can kind of see them facing and talking to their receivers, and kind of helping them game the system a little bit when it comes to tough, either jump servers or float servers. I think that speaks a lot to the confidence of a Libra, as well as a kind of their comfortability on the court, being able to say, hey, you know, I'm willing to split the court in half for myself and force, you know, a middle blocker who is so patterned on serving 5-5 to maybe have to go across his body and go 5-1. Cause that does a couple of different things, right? So one, it kind of throws the middle off a little bit if he's not comfortable serving to one. So it could be an easier serve, or he could miss the serve.
Right.
And two, it also frees up your receivers as well, so they can focus more on the attack, whether it be pipe and, you know, hitting in position four, and like kind of let you taking that responsibility in position 1 and 6. So those are some of the nuances where I think you can start seeing the differences between, you know, really, really, really high level Libras and, you know, people who are just starting to get comfortable and get with it. Cause I know with my first year, I was very, very, very adamant of just kind of maintaining my space and maybe helping out in a couple of different rotations, but it was more of just not getting aced. That was kind of the idea behind it. And then now it's been great working with Blair Band, who's the Canadian national team Libro. He's been so active and kind of voicing the opportunities to take, you know, balls or to steal balls or to shift guys into 2 receivers versus 3 receivers. So it's kind of making that next step. So it's something that, you know, they're very, very small, but it kind of helps separate yourself from maybe, you know, the next guy who's right with you in terms of numbers, would be kind of sort of those intangibles. But at the same time, it's so hard to see that from game film if you don't really know what you're looking for.
That's
if you don't
right.
necessarily know, you know, hey, why are they doing this? If you just kind of see it for what it is, it's sometimes hard to pick up on that. But I think yeah. those are some things that can be taken for young guys as well who are facing, you know, tough servers or who feel comfortable and want to help their teammates out as well. But there is one philosophy that I've been told is, like, being the Libro, it's not the prettiest position. It's kind of a grinder position. You're not necessarily going to be getting all the love. You're not making big plays. You're not making spectacular kills. Your role is sort of a glue guy. And I know that kind of sounds funny, but your role, you know, is to give away credit to your teammates, is to be the best teammate possible. And when the time comes to face a tough server, right, it's okay to get aced if you're trying to help alleviate the pressure from other guys. Because if you're getting aced and you feel confident in your ability still, you're saving the other guys who might not be able to handle the service pressure from a physical standpoint or from
also the mental pressure, right?
Exactly. So
such a great
the idea of being a Libra who's willing to take that risk and be okay, you know, experiencing a little bit of failure, as long as you're putting yourself out there to be, you know, or trying to have the betterment of the team improve as a whole, is new. It's definitely new, and something that I'm working through as well. But I think it's something that, you know, younger players should definitely be comfortable with who want to be top Libros, is, you know, don't be afraid to try new things. I know the other day in practice, our setter got on me a little bit because we were in a tough rotation and I was letting our receiver pass instead of kind of kicking him out and taking an easy serve. So it's more just kind of push yourself outside that comfort zone and help alleviate pressure from other guys. So the offense sort of flows more, you know, providing, you know, more opportunities to side out, opportunities to kill balls. So it's not very pretty. sometimes your stats are going to hurt a little bit, but it's going to be for the betterment of the team. So that's kind of that new philosophy that I've heard and I'm trying to embody and trying to work through a little bit, but definitely something new. I think something for the kids to try out in the club stage.
That's such an awesome point. Yeah. If you have the mental ability or the mental fortitude as a libero to go further outside of perhaps either your comfort zone or your specific zone of responsibility to maybe put yourself in a position to fail. If you're taking away both physical and mental pressure from others, like your two outside hitters who are less perhaps mentally ready to fail in the reception area, then that's still a net positive, even if you get aced. I've never thought about it that way. And that's absolutely brilliant. And I wanted to put something else on your radar and then ask a question just to kind of wrap this up. I've sometimes looked at setters and Maruf is a great example, the Iranian guy. I've seen him play in person before. And there's a certain like magic about him when he's really in the zone where you can tell by looking at him that he is in control of all five of his teammates and all six of the guys on the other side of the court. And he knows it and everyone else knows it. Everyone in the gym knows that Maruf is the man. He is the master. When the ball is coming to him, all other 11 people are like, yep, I'm totally at the mercy of this guy for better or for worse. And that is when the setter position really looks magical to me. The libero position, like you were saying about the moves that you can make that are intangible but can affect other things like your receivers and the other server, I think a masterful libero has control over himself, his two receivers, and the opposing server in serve receive. You're exactly right. If you can make an opposing server look at the reception pattern in front of him and second guess what he's doing based on the way you've lined up or what you're giving him or what you're taking away, then that's a victory for you as the libero, as the leader of that passing unit. If you can make a server less comfortable and therefore give yourself a better chance to side out, whether it's an easier serve or an error, that's a win for you. And that is part of your job description and part of the what separates the great from the good liberos. I love the way you said that. So my question to you is, what are some indications, like how can you tell if you are in a system or you're talking to an agent or a coach or your teammates, how can you tell if you're in a system that sees that, appreciates it, and values those contributions of the libero past just the fact that you don't lose any points in the stat sheet?
That is a really, really interesting question. Okay, so like, how can you observe it? Like, how can you feel like you're being appreciated? Is that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah. What's the payoff? What's the satisfaction? How can you feel that the work that you're doing is appreciated and then that it's like even more so than just like, yeah, your teammates tell you made a great play. How can you tell maybe that you're advancing your career or becoming truly a better player or you're being recognized as being a better player by some of those intangible things? How can you tell that that's being noticed?
Okay. Yeah, for me, it's only my third year, so I don't have too much experience in terms of kind of making that next jump. But there is one thing that for me at least, so coming from or being in Finland for the first year, coming from the US at Loyola, we didn't do too much two-man serve receive. I think there's maybe one or two occasions we did it. So it was very unfamiliar at the time. And then going to Finland, our coach wanted to really try and emphasize it and work on it and, you know, kind of make it more of a staple in the offense. And I was pretty hesitant about it. I mean, I was open to it, but I also didn't have the idea of, you know, risking a lot in terms of, you know, potentially getting aced at the detriment of my team. So I wasn't there yet from a maturity perspective. And so kind of where for me, where the personal satisfaction or the gratification came in was this year after my first year with Friedrichshafen last year, I was speaking with, for a lot of the younger guys who might not know, Marcus Steuerwald, who is an all-time great German libero, been a staple in the national team for over a decade in his professional career. And he was a great resource for me when it came to kind of working on these intangibles. And then this year, being kind of in the system now and talking with Blair and trying to get an understanding of where we want to go with our reception, There was a conversation I had with my head coach about, you know, being able to recognize the situation and having the confidence to make that decision. And it sounds pretty trivial, but as a player, I'm sure you can understand, Rob, as well. Like when something just kind of clicks and you now sort of can kind of drill down on some confidence. I know, kind of think of it like an oil well. Like you don't really think it's there. And then all of a sudden, like, boom, it's there. Now you have a whole well of confidence that you can just draw from and just be more confident with it and just start using it and start, you know, making things go, even if they're not even related to, you know, reception, might be defense or setting. It was a conversation we had after a tough loss. And we were talking about, you know, why didn't we do reception in two in a certain situation, if we know that's where they're going to be serving. And so not having, you know, received in two for probably the majority of my career at all, I just told him, I was like, hey, like, this isn't something I'm comfortable with. And so ever since then, I've been able to kind of make that jump and make that step. And so now we're getting comfortable with receiving in two and kind of doing some show and take. And now we're building on that to some new things as well. So to answer your question and kind of where does that satisfaction, where does that gratification come from? It's just kind of those clicking moments where, you know, it's going to be a grind. You're going to have to grit it out and you feel like you might be not making too much progress. But once those moments come and you can feel that there's a lot of progress being made in a short amount of time, you know, that's kind of where that satisfaction comes in. You know, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes. You know, there's thousands and thousands of reps. There's talking about strategy and talking about different things in terms of, you know, how you want to game plan and how you want to move guys. But then when it actually starts to click, for me, that's super satisfying. And you can see it in the top levels and moving on to the next levels as well, that, you know, that's kind of where the game is going and being able to strategically place guys and have guys in certain spots that make the game easier for the attack to happen. So that's kind of where I see, you know, that next step kind of being more visualized is kind of that satisfaction of it clicking kind of in that moment and then building upon that for kind of finding the next thing to attack from there.
Awesome. Awesome. And I think really every player at every position can relate to that, not just liberos and everybody in a lot of areas. I've felt it as like even a player in high school. I remember the first time when I went up to hit a ball and I actually saw the block and I hit away from it. And that I remember that light bulb moment, but even like commentating that light bulb moment or that click has happened to me before where I just understand how to process something all of a sudden and just an improvement in what I do that gives me a lot more confidence. I think players that every position in volleyball have that. If it's a setter taking, like some setters struggle taking a ball that's passed from position one, for example, and I've heard Micah Christensen talk about this, about the mechanically adjusting the way that he sets back. He like takes it more over his right shoulder than over dead above his head, whatever it is, attackers seeing the block, hitting shots, understanding range and choices and seeing defenses, whatever, middles, reading cues, making the right moves, making reads, like aerial drift and middle attack. There's so many things like that in high level volleyball that can click out of nowhere and that can move your game to the next level. And they come from hours upon hours and thousands of repetitions. But when you unlock that, it's really satisfying and it's pretty magical, and it can manifest itself on the court and depending on the position on the stat sheet in a hurry if you're really set to figure some of that stuff out. And that's so cool. All right, let's talk about your Friedrichshafen team just a little bit before we get to a couple more things here. Champions League pools are out, and I'm very excited for this because last year your team's Champions League experience was cut short a little bit because of a COVID situation with both you and a few of the other teams that were in your pool. So you actually had a pretty good draw and had a chance to make it to the top eight, but weren't able to play those last couple of matches. So you've got Jastrzębski Węgiel from Poland. You've got Nak Roeselare from Belgium and this Bulgarian team that just won like in the second leg that's in your pool. Tell me about your pool and your team's approach towards Champions League versus your approach towards the Bundesliga.
Oh, okay. So kind of breaking down the Champions League pool. So Jastrzębski or Jastrzębia, that's going to be a fantastic game.
Yeah, they're nasty.
They are crazy. So for anyone out there who hasn't been able to follow the Polish league too much, so they have Tony Uti, they have Boye, and they have Cleveneau, I believe. So they have three Olympic gold medalists from 2021. I don't know if they have any other foreigners, but they're also full of top Polish players as well. And so that's kind of that match there. So that'll be a really, really good game. It's some high level volleyball. So we're really excited about that one. And then with Ruotsalainen, they're also very sneaky as well. They made it to top eight a couple of years ago. And also for people who don't follow, you know, kind of the nitty gritty, if you will, of volleyball, Ruotsalainen and Mosaic, there are two teams in the Belgium league that have won the league for, I want to say, the last 15 years, just kind of going back and forth.
A lot of years. Yeah.
Yeah. And they always, they're very, very, always have like top guys. I believe, Mick Stahl was on Mosaic last year.
Yes, if I'm he not was. Mistaken. And now it's in Poland. Yeah. And Ruotsalainen, yeah. Last year, Ruotsalainen had, a huge spoiler role in a pool that they were in with Modena.
Yeah, they have Modena, if I'm remembering correctly.
One of the good Russian, Kuzbas, and I think Warszawa from Poland. And they beat one of those good teams. They may have even beaten Modena out of nowhere and like completely thrown a wrench in the whole like Champions League standing. Yep. So that team is that team is no joke. And then what's the name of this Bulgarian
team? Hebar
Pazarczyk. Is a team that just beat, I think they beat Olympiakos from Greece in order to get to this spot. So that is a very interesting Champions League pool, but one that you guys have a chance to, if you can take care of Ruotsalainen and Hebar and even like, and put up a good fight against Jastrzębski, you've got a real chance to make the top eight of Champions League, and that would be electric.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. The Hebar team is interesting as well. So they have a lot of really seasoned, veteran
older Bulgarian national
team guys. So they have one of the top outside hitters. I think it's from the 2012 Olympics when Bulgaria placed fourth in 2012. He's playing there.
Alexeyev is his name. They've got Salparov, the former libero that played for Zenit Kazan in the really good years. They've got Viktor Yosifov was the middle, who's the old captain of the national team.
So they're going to be a really, really good match. And just especially facing the Libero as well will be a blast.
He's awesome.
There's few of us out here. Awesome. So it's awesome to play against, you know, another top Libero. But yeah, it'll be a really, really great opportunity for us to really try and lock in and see if we can kind of take care of business and handle things on our side of the net.
Talk to me about the Bundesliga this year and the production that they're doing of it online. If people don't know about this year, like me and Everett have talked about this on the 9x9 because we're so impressed with the uptick in production quality of the Bundesliga this year. There's this like company or entity called Bounce House that's kind of producing all the Bundesliga matches. They're all live on Twitch. They're all free. They're all like, none of them are geo-blocked, and they're so like modern and fun and entertaining. And they've got like the live chat interaction. They've got pregame shows, halftime shows, like postgame. The coverage is so cool. And it's so much closer to like the way that I really see volleyball media going long-term as far as covering matches. What's been your perspective on that so far this year? Is there a difference for you as a player this year versus last year in the way your matches have been produced?
So last year we were on a German TV stream, so similar to ESPN3, how ESPN as an entity has physical channels and then the streaming.
Right.
Same thing happened with us last year. It's called Sportnet or Sport Eins or Sport Eins Plus. And so part of the games were streamed online. Other ones were on physical TV towards the end of the season, but they were kind of hard to get to sometimes and hard to access just because, you know, with my family living in the US, it's hard for me to kind of tell them, or it's hard for them to navigate, you know, some of the German websites. You know, they don't, sometimes Google Translate doesn't always work and it's kind of hard to click around.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, with Twitch, it's so much easier. And I'm not sure if anyone has kind of had the idea or the thought regarding the accessibility of volleyball, but especially when I was growing up at the club stage, like the only thing I could find were just highlight tapes online. I could rarely find any matches of like either Olympic matches, which are at that time, in my opinion, were the most heavily broadcasted men's volleyball at I'd ever witnessed. Like I had no idea of World League. I didn't know what Champions League was. I didn't know what World Cup was. All I knew is that men's volleyball was in the Olympics. But now you're starting to see this shift in terms of accessibility. It's gone through the roof with this Bounce House production. And so what I believe happened is there were a group of guys, I think one of the former German, a top German beach player, approached the Bundesliga about, you know, kind of getting the rights to the men's games and then putting them on Twitch to make them more accessible. And I think it's going to be a huge, I think it's going to be a huge thing in the future. I could be wrong. Just with general kind of the way the media is going, I think accessibility for men's volleyball is so important. And with how accessible it is, I think this might be kind of the way of the future, because like you said, it's not geo-blocked. You're able to access it and it's easy to get access to. I think that's, you know, some of the key things that might be holding volleyball back a little bit. You know, when you're trying to watch Champions League games, they're blocked in like 30 different countries. You know, on the CEV website, you know, especially if you're in certain countries that you can't watch the games, and even top games as well that are streamed on YouTube, and there's other games that aren't. So being able to have access to high level men's volleyball at a professional level, I think is a great benefit to the entire volleyball community, because it gets the visibility out there. It shows that you're playing on not just a national, but an international stage. And it just kind of grows the game. Being exposed to it at a younger age will only improve the level of the game in your respective community, your respective country for years to come. So I think it's a great benefit. I really like it. But from a player's perspective, I don't think much has changed kind of from what we've seen from it. We have done some different media things for them, which has been pretty cool. But for the most part, it's kind of been, you know, the status quo, if you will. It's kind of all been the same stuff on our end. But I do like that it's being, you know, accessible, or it is accessible to so many different people across so many different geographic regions. That's the important thing, I think, to kind of growing this brand and growing this game.
Yeah, there are a lot of companies, volleyball organizations and otherwise, that have started to figure that out as well. And if, whether it's Twitch or YouTube or whatever, the increasing the accessibility of the game is the future without question. That's everybody's understanding the value of that. The FIVB is starting to throw their weight behind that in the last year or so, which is great to see. Yeah, that's the direction the game is moving, because yeah, I agree with you. Growing up in the US, there was extremely limited coverage in the US of anything that was going on volleyball wise that wasn't the Olympics. Even college, like it was not much. I remember watching.
I think it was just like the national championship on like ESPN.
Yep. National ESPN championship game.
Maybe.
That's the one of the first games I ever watched was Stanford just mopping the floor with Penn State in 2010 in the national championship match, like the Kavika Shoji's senior year. And that was one of the things that really got me hooked on volleyball, just because I happened to stumble across that match. But if you put more volleyball in more places, more accessible, you can have more people get hooked on the games. And then like people like you and I, here we are now, like 10, 15 years later, still just talking about volleyball in addition to the volleyball that we already do to, in some cases for a living, just because we like it so much. And because we got hooked on it at a certain point, because we saw something on TV or online. And that's the value of really putting it everywhere. And I completely agree with that move. And the VLA completely agrees with that move, as you already well know. All right, I have a little speed round of questions that I put all my guys through, guys and girls come on the show. So just give me the first couple quick things that come to your head for each of these questions. You ready?
All right, let's do it.
Sweet. Early mornings or late nights?
Early mornings.
This is an easy one. You're a morning person? Okay, you're crazy. what's your favorite pregame warm-up song or artist? What kind of music for games?
I've been a big Drake fan. So Laugh Now and Cry Later is just been on repeat for the last year and a half.
Love it. What's the best day of the week?
I like Thursdays.
Okay. Stuff block or service ace? As a libero, it's a unique perspective on those two things.
I like the stuff blocks.
What's your favorite post-game meal?
Chicken and rice.
Nice. What's the hardest position in volleyball indoor?
Biased, I think it's libero, but I also think setter is very difficult as well. Not to divulge, but Joe Worsley and I had a heated debate in our living room after practice one day about who had the toughest position. So I think it's biasly libero, but I think setters have a lot of pressure on them, kind of orchestrate, you know, the whole song and dance.
I want to get Joe on the show and ask him that question, because I bet he'll reference that exact same argument that you guys had about it. What's your favorite jersey number?
11.
Is there a story behind 11? Because I've always seen you wear it for Loyola and the Iceman.
You know, this is going to sound so petty. When I was younger, I think I was like 9 years old playing youth basketball. I got 11, and I, for some reason, it was like very drawn to it. But as you know, a 9 year old is, you can kind of have, you can sometimes not like your teammates, your classmates, because you just don't have the maturity. And there's a kid that I didn't like who was number 10. And I was like, I don't want to be anything less than 10. So I have to be the next number up. And then next thing you know, it's been sort of the college number for the last 4 years. And then, working its way from there. But yeah, I think that's where it all comes from. So I know it's a little petty, but yeah, I always wanted to be number 11, I guess.
That's wonderful. I love that so much. Oh man. Cats or dogs or both?
Dogs.
Favorite sports team of all time in any sport?
Green Bay Packers.
Yes. Yes. Great choice. I was at Lambeau this weekend.
That's right. That's fantastic. At the game. Yeah, the big shutout.
I don't think I knew you were a Packers fan, Avery. That's wonderful news. Who's your favorite athlete in any sport?
Ooh.
Tough one.
There's this Indian javelin thrower who won Olympic gold. I don't know his name, but I think it's amazing what javelin throwers can do.
That's not where I was expecting you to go with that.
Yeah, if we're just going any sport, like going outside of volleyball, for those who don't know, the javelin spear, if you will, it's crazy heavy, and these guys are throwing it almost as far as Aaron Rodgers can throw a football, but add like 40 pounds to a football.
And it's like how long are those things? Like,
yeah, it's probably like 5-6 feet long. So if we're talking any sport, just absolutely being impressed by, that's got to be the one. That's for sure.
Sweet. Wow. That's not where I was expecting that to go. I love that. I love that answer. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
The ability to speak every language in the world.
Oh, great answer. Such a good answer, especially for someone for whom that ability would be incredibly useful, I'm sure. What sport are you the second best at other than volleyball? And beach volleyball does not count.
Baseball.
Neither does grass volleyball. Baseball? Nice. Beach or mountains?
Beach.
What's your favorite color?
Blue.
And what's a stronger feeling for you, loving winning or hating losing?
Yeah, losing. Hating losing. Yeah, I think it's that famous Billy Beane quote from Moneyball. It's, I hate losing. I hate losing more than I love winning. Yeah, that's, I don't know if I would put myself on the same level as Billy Beane, but I think that quote definitely says a lot about competitors and athletes.
That's been the overwhelmingly common answer to that question on the show. Yeah.
For some reason, I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah. That cause has been chiefly championed by Loy Ball, one of the great haters of losing of all time. So before we get you out of here, I wanted to talk to you about some of your experience with the VLA before, because you played one event for the Iceman this past summer when you were back in the States. You actually got to play six rotations for some of it, which was pretty cool. So you played for the Iceman for a few years now. Like our boy Tim Faulkner picked you up like very shortly after you out of Loyola. Played some really good matches, some really good tournaments, even from before it was the VLA. But I have a question about just the concept of playing professional volleyball in the U.S., which has been such an impossible dream for so many over so many years that we're working really hard on day to day. If you're not willing to put a number on this, that's okay. But If there were a percentage pay cut that you would take, and but be able to play in the U.S. and have the same like the same level of production and competitive level, and if everything else was the same except you're in the U.S., what percentage of a pay cut would you be willing to take if you were able to do it in the States?
So if I'm being totally transparent, and Rob, I feel comfortable with you. We're in the trust tree.
Absolutely.
So I don't know if you know this, but my plan is actually to stay in Europe long term after the season, and or after my playing career. So for me, I would actually prefer to have the season in Europe.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's very
cool. So pay cut, I would probably say, hey, you got to pay me 2,000% more to go back to the US. No. But if they did have a league in the US, if I was coming out of university, and if it was, you know, the exact same, say, exact same level, exact same production of the German league, of the Bundesliga, I would 100% make that my first move for sure. Because there's so many things that, like, yes, it's great getting outside the comfort zone. It's great experiencing different cultures and things of that sort. But being able to play against top American competition and being able to be, constantly in front of, other Americans who are trying to get their foot in the national team gym, I think is, a great, great opportunity. And plus, it's nice being, within, your home country as well. You definitely can't put a price on that. For me, I would 100%, if there was an option between, going abroad first or going to the US, if there is that same level and same production, as you said, I would definitely take that same production for the same price. Or, I don't know, if we're being honest, probably like 20% pay cut.
That's pretty significant.
Yeah. As long as like things were kind of taken care of as well, because it's nice, having apartment taken care of and some other expenses, but it is nice being in the home country, not having to deal with time differences, being able to talk to family on a more consistent basis. Some of those more down to earth, less financial things are always important to keep in mind.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot about that you can't put a price on. And we've heard on this show, we've heard so many things from so many different players about the different aspects of their overseas experience that are not easy. Their families, the lack of connectivity, that which is getting better as technology improves. But there is a lot about that that's really hard. For example, only having 2 hours of sunlight a day in Finland in the winter, like that sort of stuff. That sort of stuff weighs on you after a while, and there's almost an obligation that I feel and the VLA feels to provide that as an option in the States. It's we are so optimistic about the progression and the growth of the VLA that it can and will provide that option for guys and eventually girls of all points in their careers to have the option to stay home if they want to. And hopefully eventually we won't have to give them pay cuts at all, but it is cool to hear that there is, and we know this, there is a value to that. It's different for everyone. And this, especially if you're planning on staying in Europe long-term, which is very cool to hear. I selfishly don't want to lose you playing for VLA every summer, but
I'll fly in.
Yeah, sweet. You wouldn't be the first one.
I think there's just kind of to your point as well, from my perspective with the VLA and why I also love it so much. Because right now, like, it's building to become something, awesome and fantastic in the future. But with my experience for the past 3 years with it, it's been great coming home and knowing I can get high level play and high level training. It's sweet being able to play 3, 4, 5 matches, knowing that, in one weekend I can get a whole month of training in from a 6v6 perspective at a high level. That's fantastic. And being able to use that and compound that over the course of the summer into the next professional season, it's been a great supplement for the development. And I can definitely say that with confidence. And for me, that was a huge selling point when I was speaking with Tim, some of the other Iceman guys as well. Having that outlet and having that resource has been immensely helpful.
Yeah, we've loved providing it to guys like you who are just coming back for the summers and are going back overseas as a supplement, as a keeping them fresh, giving them really good high quality reps stateside, and the film that comes from it too. I know a lot of guys have taken a lot of value from. So we are excited to be able to provide that to you guys. And hopefully there'll be more dollars associated with it too, very shortly down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. I think another thing as well is, like you said, for the film, there is a couple guys who have gone pro with the VLA film. And I think it's just proof with that, just as it is, you know, just the quality as well as the development and kind of where it's grown from, you know, where it was and, you know, kind of its first couple of steps, its infant days, if you will, to where it is now, to now where guys are using it as, you know, recruiting material to sign pro contracts. It's already grown leaps and bounds from, you know, kind of where you guys were starting off in its heyday or in infancy days to where it is now. So it's great to see the trajectory that's on moving forward. You know, I think it can only go up from here.
We agree and we appreciate that. A lot more cool stuff coming for the season. We will get a lot more info about the upcoming season starting off in January very, very soon. In the next month or two, you can expect a lot of detail about the growth of the league and about the model of the season and all sorts of good VLA intensive stuff. So make sure you're subscribed here on the YouTube channel at VLA Volleyball on Instagram, the website, everything will be in the description here. And make sure you give Avery a follow. His Instagram is on the screen at aaylesworth408, I believe. And
that's the one.
And so the Twitch streams of the Bundesliga, I'll put them in the description as well. And Champions League, it'll be pretty accessible to catch a lot of Friedrichshafen matches for the rest of this club season going through March, April, however long it goes. So if you want to see Avery play overseas, that is very accessible to you. So we'll make sure you have all the links where to find that.
Yeah, awesome. And as a promise I made to the people that helped me get my foot in the door with my Instagram, feel free to reach out if you have any questions whatsoever. You know, there's a lot of people willing to help, but there's also very, very few of us who have been able to make the jump. So if you're wanting to learn or know more, you know, don't hesitate to reach out. There's a lot of us who are willing to pay it forward and willing to kind of help this next generation get their foot in the door and, you know, definitely realize that lifelong dream of, you know, being a professional volleyball player. So, because like Rob said, it's aaylesworth408. So feel free to reach out if you have any questions whatsoever, happy to help out any way I can.
Awesome, dude. Thank you for all of this incredible detail you've shared today and for being such a great resource to everybody listening and everybody who wants to reach out to you. And I know they will because you are awesome and you're an open book and people can and should come to you for any advice that they can get. So thanks for joining the show, buddy. It's great to talk to you. Good luck the rest of the season.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks everyone for watching. We will see you all next time. Peace.